Hello and welcome to another episode of Giant Mess, a super sloppy sports and entertainment talk show that covers Giants football, Mets baseball, movies, TV shows, and comedy. It's got some life lessons mixed in for good measure. It's hosted by Giant Mess. That's me, the real cinch, Neil Lynch. I'm a former college quarterback and pitcher turned snitcher. That's right, y'all. I'm narking like crazy. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the top 10 movies of 2023, the top 10 TV shows of 2023 as rated by or ranked by IMDb, give my reactions to those. The most anticipated movies of 2024, what are they according to IMDb? It's been a while since we talked about movies, so I thought I would run down, even though it's halfway through January, I thought I'd run down the top 10 movies of 2023, give my thoughts. This is the official list from IMDb. This is just for the United States. This is not worldwide because the USA is the only country that matters, right? It's a joke. But I felt like most of my audience in the United States of America, apologies to the rest of the world, but we're going to do the United States of America's best movies of 2023. Or in the United States, I don't think it has to be American, the movies. I don't know. I didn't really read it. Number one is Oppenheimer. I don't think that's like a big surprise. I'm regretting that I didn't go see it as God and Christopher Nolan intended me to see it. 70 millimeters, IMAX, whatever. That's my B. Apparently it's going to come to Peacock, streaming on Peacock, the cock, on February 16th. So I'm looking forward to that. Even though, I may or may not be away and not have access to the cock, as it were. But that should be an interesting movie to watch. And then number two, we have Barbie, of course. I mean, how could you not have Barbie and Oppenheimer 1 and 2, considering the worldwide global phenomenon with how viral that shit was? Barbenheimer, Oppen... I did get to see Barbie. Do I want to get in trouble? Sure. Why not? I'm already in so much trouble. Why not throw this into the mix? Okay, straight white male. No one wants to hear your opinion. I friggin' get it. I'm not the intended audience. I'm not the target audience. The target audience is primarily, I would think, women. People who played with the Barbie doll growing up as kids. Now they are most likely mothers, grandmothers, etc. Taking their children, their grandchildren to go see this movie to say, hey, this is what I was into when I was young, and now, it essentially was just one big, like, response, reaction video to all the criticism that the doll has come under fire for over the past, I don't know how many decades, specifically probably the past two decades,
or past decade.
This past decade has been pretty interesting. I'm not the target audience.
A lot of messaging about,
a lot of good messaging that I agree with, right? Barbie might be holding certain women to certain standards, beauty standards, all that shit. So I'm all for that, right? Like, let's make Barbie more accessible, more grounded. We don't want to give girls, young women, complexes. Like, to say, like, you're not good enough or whatever. So, yeah, I get that part. And the other part of it was like, oh, it's the patriarchy. The patriarchy is ruining the world. Men suck, especially straight men suck. So, as a straight white man, I was like, ooh, boy. We're painting with some really broad strokes here, huh? Okay. Some of it was funny. I've always appreciated and liked Ryan Gosling in comedies, and I thought he did pretty well as Ken. I don't think could have asked for a better Ken. Margot Robbie was the perfect Barbie, and I laughed out loud once. That's not to say that I didn't find... it's just not laugh out loud funny, but I love the way like it was shot. I loved how they treated a lot of the story, the magic of the story, if that makes sense. So it's like there are some, like, okay, Barbie's in this fictional world or universe where it's just other Barbies, right? And Kens. And she crosses over to the real world. Okay, I get it. So I thought that was the fish out of water aspect. I felt like they could have played that up more, but I understand you don't want to be a one-note kind of movie, but I think they could have played with that a little bit more, fish out of water. And, you know, there's the climax, or like the come to Jesus moment, I guess, is when Margot Robbie's like, you know, not wearing the high heels and the makeup and the revealing dresses and this and that and this and that. And she's like, but no one will find me pretty or something like that. No one will think I'm beautiful. And I think that's something that Margot Robbie probably personally struggles with, her beauty, because she is put up on a pedestal by a lot of people. Like, I just saw something where she said that she was supposed to be in an upcoming movie, but declined or passed because she feels like people are sick of seeing her. Like the first comment, the viral tweet that went viral was like, I've literally never been sick of looking at Margot Robbie or watching Margot Robbie. So I don't know, maybe she's getting out with the getting's good in terms of like she's kind of made her hay. She feels good about what her track. I mean, she's had you want to talk about a decade. Margot Robbie, past 10 years. Holy smokes. Kicked it off with Wolf of Wall Street, Harley Quinn, Suicide Squad, Barbie. Yeah, I think she's doing just fine. But maybe she thinks, hey, I've considered myself successful, I'm going to go out on top type of thing. She wants others to have a shot, which I don't know if I could ever get to that point where it's like I'm on top and now others can do it. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like I would probably hit that mark as well. But she, the come to Jesus moment was Margot Robbie as Barbie is like, you know, what if I'm the stereo? She plays stereotypical Barbie, which I thought was kind of fun and funny. And she's like, well, if I'm not this stereotypical Barbie, no one will like me or want to play with me or blah, blah, blah. And Kate McKinnon, who is good in this movie as well, again, not exactly laugh out loud funny, but made me smirk and smile and, you know, had a big grin, shit-eating grin on my face whenever she came on screen as weird Barbie. I thought that was cool. She was like, I don't think anyone would get sick of looking at you. You don't have to worry about that. So, yeah, it's pretty much universal. Like, hey, Margot Robbie, keep on keeping on. $1.44 billion at the global box office while dismantling the patriarchy in native Barbie land and in the real world. Rarely have the movies created a cultural conversation quite like the Barbenheimer era, which fans dressed up for opening weekend. Men felt attacked. And the Mattel Cinematic Universe. Yeah, I mean, I guess I felt attacked. I don't think is that bad. I don't think that's bad to say. I think, you know, it's brave for me to admit that I was attacked. But yeah, I don't know. I felt attacked. It was just like, take your medicine for 2 hours. Like, even though I don't do the majority of the stuff that they were talking about in that movie, it's like, oof. So we're just gonna do this for 2 hours. Okay, cool. You know, it's just like, I don't know. I assume, like, you know, and this is the response or the criticism that I'll get is like, well, look at like every movie prior to blah blah blah, male dominated, it's dominated by straight white men. But I don't. There's no like, maybe it was. The messaging was more coded. I guess you could say that, more coded in the 80s and 90s, 2000s. And this was just so, like, hit you over the head with the messaging. You know? In a way, I was like, well, can we, like, what can we do to not... I mean, this is so, like, we're talking directly to you, straight white man. You suck. like, yeah, I know I suck. Can you just calm down, please, and relax? I'm not hurting anyone. Please. I'm not. Yes, I have a fragile ego. And, yeah, but whatever. You know? My time has come and gone and passed, and I miss my window of opportunity, I guess. And, I don't know. I'm sure some of my friends will be like, Neil, you sound like such a conservative bigot. It's like, nah, it's just, obviously the movie was wildly successful and popular, and it was not a bad movie. It just, I thought about turning it off. I guess that's how attacked I felt. I was just like, oh, okay. Men are shitty. Yeah. Like that is not pumped into our brains 24/7 now. It's like, that's what I don't get about a lot of this, what's going on culturally and in our society. It's just like, it's how we end up with fucking Trump as president. It really is. Just like, we can't just find a happy medium anywhere on that spectrum. Fuck, dude. It's just like, we're going to take it to 11 on the dial. Again, I mean, I love the visuals. I think it was clever what they were doing a lot of the time with the doll jokes, a lot of doll jokes that I appreciated. And, you know, the scenery, the set design, costume design, the writing, meh. You know, the plot was decent, but, you know, you kind of lose interest after it. Like, show me a straight guy that goes into that, or just a guy. Goes into that theater and comes out and is like, wow, that was hilarious and so good. It's like, I gotta question you. Let me pull you aside here in this room real quick and ask you some questions. You for real? Question one, you for real? So, yeah. I mean, I can understand why it was crazy, crazy popular and one of the top movies of 2023. Because it's like, as a woman, it must be not vindicating. That's not the word. Vilifying? Verifying. I don't know. I think it speaks to women and, you know, the women that grew up with Barbie probably in the 80s and 90s or previous to that and what they thought being a woman was. And, you know, even America Ferrara, the Mattel, I guess, receptionist? Secretary? Administrative person? I don't know what her official role was. I forget. But, you know, what the ideal was that I guess Barbie subconsciously gave to her growing up. But then how, like, women keep other women down. Like, women should be celebrating women. Which I think is, yeah, that's good. That's a great point. I agree with that. More of that, please. Let's just not completely shit on dudes. Like, all men? All men? All men. Okay. Except Alan. And it was like, well, what's up with Alan? What's the story behind Alan? I don't feel like they fully played that one out. It was just like, he doesn't like being amongst all the Kens in Barbie Land. And he's played by Michael Cera. And it's, you know, pretty good job. But like, what was the climax? He wants to get out of Barbie Land. He kind of gets out of Barbie Land. He gets in a massive fight. And then I don't remember what happens with him. I don't know. I kind of lost interest. but you know, it's not meant for me, but there's a lot to appreciate about the movie. But I think that it's now entering in, and maybe it's not the first to do it, but it's definitely part of this movement where like now we're most movies now are going to be some kind of like direct messaging about something. And I don't know if that's, it doesn't appeal to me as much. And I'm sure you can point to a lot of movies from the past and say like, hey, you know, Star Wars was really about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict in the Gaza Strip. It was? Oh, shit. You know, that kind of thing. But, it is bonkers that I can watch a movie and see that going on and be entertained and immersed. And then something like that is essentially going on in real life. And I don't dig into it. It's like, what is wrong with you, Neil? So yeah, who the fuck am I? I'm a piece of shit man, apparently. So Barbie, you done you done fouled me up big time. I was just sitting there like, oh man, I am just taking my licks here, huh? Down the hatch. Yum, yum, yum. Medicine in my tum. IMDb's number 3 top movie of 2023, the Super Mario Brothers movie, which was not too well praised by the critics, but I think audiences loved it, and I am one of them. I think I could watch this, you know, over and over on loop. I don't know if that's because I started playing Mario Brothers when I was officially 5 years old. I don't know if that's part of it, but, you know, Mario Kart was something that I got into. 11, 12, 13. I never really got into N64. I think it was a PlayStation guy. I never got into N64. And so that's when my torrid affair with Mario and Luigi kind of came to a screeching halt. And then I don't think it picked back up until recently, when we played Mario Kart with my nephew and niece down in South Carolina, and I was like, oh no, I've caught the bug again. And then so, you know, my mother and sister teamed up and bought a Nintendo Switch for me and my daughter. And so we play it, and it's been quite an education, quite a lesson in learning for me and my daughter, specifically her. It's like, I kind of use that as an excuse, like, yeah, let's play Mario Kart. And in my head, I'm going, so I can teach you a valuable life lesson about resilience, composure, sportsmanship. It's like, and in reality, I'm just like drooling and foaming at the mouth and all wide-eyed and bushy-tailed. But the movie, $1.36 billion worldwide, second highest grossing movie of the year, most successful video game adaptation of all time. So in the same year, and we'll get to it, there's another video game adaptation that we'll get to in the same year, 2023. What a year for video game adaptations. Bowser's love song Peaches by Jack Black was a Billboard Top 100 hit. Oh my God. Peaches, 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 peaches. Yeah, it's a 7 of 10 on IMDb. I might go high as an 8 out of 10. I liked it that much. And I know people were kind of down on having Chris Pratt play an Italian plumber. I think Charlie Day was the perfect choice for Luigi. Seth Rogen, perfect choice for Donkey Kong. Jack Black as Bowser, perfect. Chris Pratt as Mario was like the one where I think people worried the most. And it was like, I think he pulls it off, you know? Because they kind of poke fun at the heavy Italian fake accent at the in the open when they first introduced Mario and Luigi in that the commercial for their new plumbing business that they started together. Anya Taylor-Joy plays Peaches. That makes sense. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I could watch that every day for the rest of the days. Number 4 on IMDb's list is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which I when I did my review of Guardians, I said that it was it culminated the best trilogy of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I guess when you talk about just trilogies, franchises that have 3 movies in it, I think it outdoes Iron Man. I think it outdoes Thor. Did Captain America have 3? I don't know. But I feel like, yeah, that I said it at the time and I stand by it. $845 million worldwide, fourth highest grossing movie of the year. And even though, you know, this was, spoiler alert, eventually, like, the disbanding of the Guardians of the Galaxy as we know them, Star-Lord will return as seen in the post-credits. So, be interesting to see what direction they go in. I had just finished. There's Loki, which I just finished. But I also just finished What If? On Disney Plus, I really enjoyed season 1. I guess I wasn't paying too close attention to season 1 because I didn't think they were actually trying to tell one cohesive thread of a story. I was like, just hey, check this crazy shit out. What if this actually happened? Which I would equally eat up. I would eat that up just as fervently. But the fact that season 2, and maybe this is on me, I should have just rewatched season 1 going into season 2. But season 2, there is, it's like, it is a all these episodes are kind of tied together, even though it doesn't seem like that with the first two or three. The final four or whatever, it's like, oh, this is all part of one cohesive story, a thread. And now I'm like trying to figure out, okay. Because season one felt like this is the bridge from WandaVision to Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Like, we're going to tease certain stuff in What If, and then it's going to come to fruition and be, you know, blown out on a bigger scale with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And that wasn't necessarily the case. Even though, did they in that movie do Captain Carter? I can't remember. This one, it feels like they're really pushing Captain Carter, Peggy Carter as the, you know, what if Peggy Carter got in the machine instead of Steve Rogers? And so she becomes the super soldier. She becomes Captain Carter. And they really were pushing on that. And it almost became like a Birds of Prey situation, because it was like Captain Carter, this new superhero that I've never heard of before, Kalari, Native American who gets powers from the Tesseract and just goes ham on conquistadors, invaders, conquerors, colonialists. And so they kind of team up. So I thought that was kind of cool. But they team up with another two women, don't they? Yeah. It's like an all-female kind of led force. Which, you know what? I think it could be kind of cool. But Guardians Volume 3. Very emotional. Tugged at the heartstrings. I thought the soundtrack was banging like it always is. But curious to see how Star-Lord works his way into things. So What If teased, what did they call it? Guardians of the Multiverse. So I'm wondering if that is the future of Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it's like James Gunn kind of, that was his letter of resignation, if you will, to the MCU. It was his swan song, his love letter to that franchise. And so now, considering what I saw in What If with the Guardians of the Multiverse, I think that might be the direction that they take, the MCU takes it, in terms of how does Guardians as a franchise evolve and keep going? And can they squeeze out another three with this Guardians of the Multiverse idea? Which, again, that tickles my ivory. Number five is The Little Mermaid. I think I gave a little mini review of this when Brie and I saw this. We did not see this in the theater. We saw this on Disney Plus. So I want to say that was possibly in December or November. I cannot remember. I think it's December. Had an impressive domestic opening, almost $100 million on Memorial Day weekend, but struggled to meet worldwide revenue expectations. It's the latest live-action reboot. It's all right. 7.2 out of 10 rating on IMDb. You know, I think Melissa McCarthy as Ursula was an amazing choice. Javier Bardem as King Triton was a pretty good choice. Halle Bailey, amazing singer, so she's got pipes. It's hard to top the ridge. You know, the OG, it's kind of like, the OG was good for me. I don't know if I needed this, but then again, not for me, okay? Not the target audience. So, did Brie like it? I think. I'll say this, she has not asked to watch it again. She'll watch Captain Underpants from now until eternity ends. And she'll watch Sing 2 on loop. There are certain movies she just goes back to over and over again. And, you know, there are plenty of Disney movies that I really like that she won't, that I thought she would like and we could watch ad infinitum, ad nauseum, but nope. Like Coco, I could watch that every day. Moana, I could watch that every day. Just certain stuff. Like, I was really hoping that we kept on teasing, like, Spider-Man across the multiverse or Spider-Verse. She's like, doesn't have a lot of interest in that. I had to basically, incept her brain while she slept so that we could watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutants of Mayhem. Little Mermaid, one and done. So, yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know. It also, like, it freaks me out when there's underwater, people underwater, and they're talking and there are no bubbles. I know that would be distracting if they added the bubbles, but it's with them not talking the bubbles, I kind of forget that they're underwater, with the exception of their hair floating everywhere. So it's a surreal experience, for sure. Well, hot damn, speak of the devil. Number 6, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb. Whoa. Became the 6th highest grossing film of the year. It's swung past its predecessor's total gross of $385 million after 12 days. Oh, damn. I still have not seen this movie, and I am kicking myself all the goddamn time. There are two versions of the film that were released in theaters, one with slight dialogue and animation differences, which kept the fans guessing while trying to keep up with the 280 versions of Spider-Man that appear in the film, including Spider-Punk, Spider-Woman, and Spider-Man India. Spider-Punk played voiced by Daniel Kaluuya, and Spider-Woman played by Issa Rae. Issa Rae was also in Barbie, I forgot about that. I don't know Karen Sony, but Hailee Steinfeld is in this movie. I really liked the original. I remember trying to get, I think Brie was probably 2 at the time. Maybe 1 or 2, I don't know. It was in our old house that we owned together. And I just remember her just not, couldn't hold her attention, but I friggin' loved it. So I gotta tune in that ASAP. Number 7, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. I've been meaning to review this forever. 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb. I have personally never played D&D. A non-D&D guy. I don't know that I will ever get into it. Because it seems like it's a pretty harsh experience. Like, you know, I don't think they... It's a very tight-knit, close community that's not kind to outsiders, but that could be just it's just my perspective. That's just maybe unjudgmental. I'm sure if you played Dungeons and Dragons, your experience with this film might have been way more enhanced, because there's probably Easter eggs out the wazoo and, you know, little inside jokes that only D&D players, avid players, would get. But I haven't played a lick of the D in the D, and I love this movie. I thought it was really awesome. I mean, Chris Pine is just, he's the best. You know, it's hard not to get behind that kind of guy. Michelle Rodriguez is awesome in this movie. There's Sophia Lillis and Regé-Jean Page. I think Will Smith's kid is in this. He's got a pretty cool character and story arc. What's his face? Wow, blanking on his name. And it's right there for the picking. That is awful. Why does Willem Dafoe keep popping up in my brain? It's not Willem Dafoe, brain. Idiot. Sweet baby Jane. So Justice Smith is Will Smith's kid. And then... Hugh Grant. My God, that is pathetic. Hugh Grant, pretty decent villain. And I thought the special effects was pretty good. There were only certain parts where I was like, eh. Had a $208 million worldwide box office gross, which feels low. But I enjoyed it thoroughly. And then maybe one of these days, before I kick the bucket, I'll review it officially. But... it's a recommend for me, dog. And then number 8, John Wick Chapter 4. I did do a review of this officially. It's still getting views on YouTube, but people like tune out after like 30 seconds, which is like, wow, people can't even last a minute with this guy. Holla back at your boy. John Wick Chapter 4. I thought this was, much like I said, the Guardians of the Galaxy was the best trilogy in the MCU. I said that this is the best quadrilogy, a franchise of series that only has 4 installments, which I don't think there have been many. Like, so I don't know that you can, like, you know, Fast and the Furious is not a quadrilogy. And I wouldn't even say 1 through 4. 1's good, 2 no, 3 no. 2 maybe, 3 no. 4 is when it started to kind of pick up steam again. But I don't think anyone would say 4 is like the best of the 10. Holy shite. But amongst, I don't think there are many franchises with only 4 movies. Let me look that shit up real quick. Franchises with only 4 movies. All right. Uh-huh. Okay, so there's only 5. Oh, it's called the Tetralogy? Tetra meaning 4. Logia meaning discourse. Okay. So this is from the generative AI that I signed up for. The Matrix, which I think a lot of people would say 1 was cool, 2 was cool, 3 not so much, 4 better than 3 maybe, or maybe not as good as 3. Die Hard, 1 through 4. 1, yes, 2, yes, 3, 4, 3, yes, 4, no. I want to say Die Hard 4, no, right? No. 4, Live Free or Die Hard. Yeah, so I would say Wick's above that. And by the way, there have been way more diehards, so I don't know what the... Come on, AI. And this is what I'm talking about. AI doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. Twilight. Pff, are you serious, Clark? Shrek. No thanks. Scream, which has had more. Jaws. Was there a Jaws 5? Cruel Jaws. No fucking way, dude. That's not part of the franchise. Jaws 1 through 4, I think a lot of people would say 1 and 2, yes, 3, slocky shtick, 4, no thanks. Psycho? I don't think so. Alien? Mission Impossible? Oh, here we go. List our feature films with 4 entries. I mean, Three Ninjas, what are we talking about here? American Tail? Abbott and Costello? Airport? Oh no, Airport. I'm thinking of Airplane. Dear God. Alvin and the Chipmunks. Holy shit. Barbershop. Well, they're saying here Tim Burton and Joel Schumacher's series. I don't even know if I buy that, but sure, why not? That had 4, which I think a lot of people would say. 2 of the 4. Down with 2 of the 4. The real ones. I mean, I'm a child of the 90s, right? That's when I was getting the pubes and whatnot. So I'm going to say Batman Forever. Yeah. I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt there. Bloodsport. Never seen a lick of Bloodsport. Which is crazy because I think I'm in a fantasy football league where that is the league name. Show No Mercy. Is that from Bloodsport? I don't know. Okay. Uh-huh. Candyman. That's a movie and or franchise I don't think I'll ever dip my toe into. Critters. Which is pretty funny. The Crow? That's wild. The Cutting Edge? That shouldn't count. 3 of those are TV movies. What are we doing? Dick Tracy? DuckTales? Death Race? What? Death Race got 4? That's wild. Dennis the Menace? That shouldn't count. Diary of a Wimpy Kid? Yeah, it feels like there's a million of those movies. The Expendables? Which, I don't think that's come out yet. The 4th one. Let's see, we're at G now. Ghostbusters. Which, they're not counting the 2016 version. Which, I guess, is an alternate universe reboot. Okay. So, yeah, Ghostbusters. I mean, that could be... It might be John Wick 1, Ghostbusters 2. Ghostbusters 1 and 2... Yeah, hell yes, yes. Afterlife, which I liked. Do I like it more than Ghostbusters 1 and 2? No. But is it that far off from Ghostbusters 1 and 2? No. And then you have Frozen Empire coming out this year. Hell yeah. It looks like Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd are more involved in that, which is good to see. And then you have Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, and Patrick Oswald Patton. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. The Grudge. Holy crap. Godzilla. But I think that's the Re-Wa era. That's not the, what is it? Legacy Pictures one. Halloween Town. Hilarious. Hotel Transylvania. I mean, you can see what I'm getting at here. High School Musical. Like, there have been a ton of movies, franchises that have four movies, but a lot of these are, like, direct to blah, 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 TV movie. Like, it, very few are totally in theaters, wide release, all successful, all not just successful from a money standpoint, revenue standpoint, box office, the like, but also from a critical standpoint, like loved by critics and fans alike. John Wick 4. Like fucking Jarhead has four movies in it. Get out of here, dude. Jumanji? I don't know about that. I was right about Jaws. Jeepers Creepers has four. Yeah, I mean, you're the Karate Kid, Kung Fu Panda. That's got a fourth one coming out this year. Legally Blonde has four. That doesn't sound right. The Lego Movie has four. I liked all the Lego movies, but it's still not on the level of John Wick, brother. Lethal Weapon got four. Like, I've only seen probably two of the four in that mix. Lilo and Stitch got four. What? Yeah, a lot of these are straight to video, direct to video. Mad Max has four. Okay. But now they're going to get a fifth, right? Which we'll get to in a little bit. Madagascar had four. Yeah, so I would have to say, without boring you to absolute tears and also your demise, I'm not going to go through the whole list. But safe to say, from a brief glance and look at things, Wild Things has four. Get the fuck out of here. It's safe to say that John Wick is the best of the tetralogies. $440 million at the worldwide box office. I guess I'll watch the spinoff, the TV show, the TV series spinoff. I guess. Continental, right, on HBO Max. So, I mean, it's obvious they plan to expand the universe and get jiggy with it, but, like, I'm good with the four. Number nine, Sound of Freedom. Gonna be honest, I keep seeing this title. I have no idea what it's about. Jim Caviezel. Autumn is to pay the experience for a buying ticket of strangers to pick up the box at a later time. Other than my never means to use. Pay off the other reporting that made. Stranger open wing. How can you be the moon? $247? $247 million worldwide. Wait a minute. This generated as much more box office than Dungeons and Dragons, A Honor Among Thieves? What are we talking about, dude? So yeah, I guess I gotta check out Sound of Freedom. Can I get a what? Let me get a synopsis up in here. PG-13, 2 hours 11 minutes, the incredible true story of a former government agent turned vigilante who embarks on a dangerous mission to rescue hundreds of children from traffickers. Okay, Mira Sorvino, Jim Caviezel. I just figured this is like an indie type thing that, you know, it's like hip to be square to like it and to know about it and recommend it, but hot damn, alrighty then, apparently it did very well, so I guess check that out. I can't speak to it at all, but maybe I'll have to give it a gander. And then number 10, Killers of the Flower Moon, 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb. 206 minutes long. Ay, ay, ay. Took home $44 million worldwide opening weekend. And, I know I need to see it. But it's also like Barbie. It's like, why does it feel like we're going to paint another broad stroke and say all white men suck? Why does that feel like that's going to happen? But I imagine that that'll get a bunch of awards. Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, and Lily Gladstone. I guess that she's picking up steam in terms of awards, which makes sense. And then Jesse Plemons is also in it. Aye, aye, aye. So I think it was originally on Netflix, and then it was on Apple TV. There's been a lot of interesting things going on with streaming where, like, I'm seeing a whole slew of HBO Max titles appearing on other streaming services, like for free. Netflix, Prime Video, Hulu, you know, a lot of Disney Plus stuff is now premiering on Hulu or streaming. I don't know. It's pretty cool to see, because I think, you know, I'm a huge advocate of, like, let's get our stuff out there to as many places as possible to get as many eyeballs on it as possible. But that's not how you make the money, Lebowski. So yeah, those are the top 10 movies of 2023 as rated by IMDb. I do think there are a few movies that you should probably add to the list that are not on here. I know it probably got a little bit overshadowed by Barbenheimer, but Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, I haven't seen it, but that's something that I would like to see now that I think I'm completely caught up on the series, on the franchise. Air was another one that I thought is on the cusp of being in the top 10. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. That's one that I hope to review. I've been wanting to review for a long time, but, you know, Matt Damon's awesome. Ben Affleck's awesome. You got Chris Tucker's awesome. Jason Bateman is awesome. Viola Davis is awesome. Like, everyone is just so good in this movie. And it's interesting that you would ever think that the business and behind Nike's rise to fame, like how the behind the scenes of that would make for an entertaining movie, but it really does. It's like got all, not the same beats, but it's got a similar underdog type current to it that you would see in a lot of sports movies, where it's more about the players and the game and the action. This follows that same kind of rhythm and pulls it up very nicely. Very nice. Past Lives, I've heard a lot about that I really want to see. I just haven't been, I don't think it's available on streaming for free yet, and I'm a cheap Scrooge. The Holdovers is one that I can't bring myself to watch, and I don't know why. I think it's Alexander Payne. I don't know that I've had a really good track record with Alexander Payne, to be honest. I mean, he wrote, produced, and directed Downsizing, which I guess was supposed to get, had a lot of Oscars buzz and then did nothing. Nebraska, which was Will Forte's foray into drama. The Descendants, which I never saw. Cedar Rapids, he's a producer on Cedar Rapids. Executive producer, Sideways. He was the writer of I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Interesting. I guess he did write and direct Sideways, my bad. He also wrote and directed About Schmidt, which I never saw. He wrote Jurassic Park 3, which is wild. And he wrote and directed Election. Ah, okay. I feel like I need to rewatch Election. I listened to Unspooled with Paul Scheer and Amy Nicholson. And they did a kind of a retrospective look back review of like a film essay on Election. And I do think I should, because I remember seeing that in a theater and not knowing what I was going into and thinking it's going to be this kind of high school comedy type thing along the lines of American Pie or 10 Things I Hate About You and that similar realm, and it was not. And I think it caught me off guard, and I think if I were to rewatch it today, it might hit a chord with me more. So that's something that I gotta figure out. Yeah, an executive producer on Hung. So, I don't know. You know, I guess I should give it a shot. Why not? The Holdovers. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. Wow. What a hole. Great movie. I think I liked it more than my daughter and my nephew and my niece. I mean, it's got, like, the soundtrack is basically custom tailor-made for these ears, and that went a long way with me. But I also appreciated a lot of the, I guess they say, unique visual style. I do think they went a little overboard with the casts and the number of mutants involved, and I think they could have not, because where do you go from here? That's a lot of characters that are involved, or they just, what happens there? Megan, which I did a review of, unapologetic unapologetically silly, rare horror comedy that delivers chuckles as effortlessly as chills, and I have to agree there. I really like that movie. Blackberry, which I still haven't seen, but it's got Jay Baruchel, Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny, directed by Matt Johnson. A terrifically entertaining look at the rise and fall of a generation-defining gadget. Was it Brick Breaker? And Snake was the other one, right? Talk to Me, a creepy 21st century horror yarn built on classic foundations, gripping story, impressive practical effects, which, good on ya. Love the practical effects. Poor Things with Emma Stone, that's made a lot of lists. Creed 3 is on here, and I don't know that it necessarily deserves to be on there. I mean, it's not high up on the list, but I did like a little mini review of it, I think, and I gotta tell you, I don't know. But I guess it does wrap up the trilogy in a nice way. Godzilla Minus One. I am kicking myself for not going to see this in the theater. I really am. That's the way it should be experienced, and I feel like it's probably out of theaters by now or is going to leave theaters, and I'm not going to be able to see it in theaters. So hopefully once the 25th anniversary comes around, my ticker is still ticking. They re-release it in theaters because it's got engaging human stories amongst the action. And apparently Godzilla is terrifying, which, I mean, I still to this day have dreams about, like, if I'm in a situation where Godzilla is present, I'm terrified. So apparently he's really terrified, but it's also the engaging human stories. And that's what's going on with Monarch, The Legacy of Monsters on Apple TV. If you don't have Apple TV, I don't know, maybe I'll give you my password just so you can see it when we talk about it, okay? Because I love that series. But what was so great about the series is, like, they didn't feel compelled or felt it was necessary to constantly be all about the monsters all the time. It was more about the dynamic between characters, the humanity of it all, and I think focusing on that really helped the series take that franchise to another level. Because I don't think Godzilla is bad. I don't think the next Godzilla installment, the sequel, was that bad. And I don't think Godzilla vs. King Kong was that bad. They're all decent. But if you were, like, Monarch goes heads and tails above all three of those. But it also fills in the gaps between each of those movies, which is nice. And it's like, I'm not a huge fan of prequels, because it's like, well, you know how this ends up. You know how this turns out. But there is something about filling in the gaps in between these movies when they came out and how they sync up and time out. It's like pretty baller. And I thought it was so cool what they did with Kurt Russell and Wyatt, his son Wyatt Russell, where they play the same character but X years amount apart. So yeah, Godzilla Minus One and Monarch. That's your homework. It's my homework as well. I just finished the Monarch season one. And it ends with, I guess this is a spoiler, so I shouldn't say it. But, I mean, if you're familiar with the film releases, movies that have released, you probably have a good sense of what to expect at the end of season one. And yet, even though it's like kind of, okay, I get what they're leading up to here, it's still like, oh, yes. Like, I knew that was gonna happen, and it was like as good as I thought it would be. Awesome way to end this season, and I'm looking forward to season two. And I'm wondering if season two is a nice little runway to the fourth installment of Godzilla. Although I think the fourth installment of Godzilla comes out this year or next year, I forget. So Godzilla Minus One focuses in on the human interest level, you know, relationships, the whatnot, but also like the action scenes are just like not unlike anything we've seen with the American series of films, not the Reiwa era, which I probably should check that out as well. May-December, kind of interesting. I didn't, directed by Todd Haynes, which I've had a kind of a mixed bag with Todd Haynes, Dark Waters was pretty decent. I didn't see Carol. I'm Not There. I didn't see like Far From Heaven, Velvet Goldmine, Safe. Those were what like really kicked him up into like the acclaimed director status level tier. But I liked May December, you know. So I have no qualms or beef with that being on the list there. And then in terms of some of the other movies on this list, yeah, I haven't really seen them, so sorry. Movies that are currently leading the way in terms of awards, I mean, Oppenheimer's 174 wins already. Barbie 66 wins. Holdover 65 wins. Interesting. Killers of the Flower Moon 45. Poor Things 39. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse 32, Past Lives 31, The Zone of Interest 25 wins. What the fuck? Okay. And, oh, The Creator. 7 wins, all for best visual effects, and I'd have to agree. I mean, there wasn't one point where I was, like, doubting what I was seeing or thinking, well, this is CGI. It just all looks so real, you know, right there with District 9. Which was felt, I mean, as we've seen, is like light years ahead of what other movies. And what was the other one that was kind of like District 9 that just felt like, wow, can't remember. Talk to Me, half a dozen wins. Yeah, so those are the movies that are kind of leading the way. So those are probably what you can expect come Oscar season. I didn't even describe what Past Lives was about. Nora and Hae Sung, two deeply connected childhood friends, are wrest apart after Nora's family emigrates from South Korea. 2 decades later, they are reunited in New York for one fateful week as they confront notions of destiny, love, and the choices that make a life in this heart-rending modern romance. Oh, it's a dramatic romance, romantic dramedy. Why did I think there was time travel in this one? Neil, you fool. There was another one like that, no? Oh boy. My mind, it's gone. So yeah, those are the top movies of 2023. Most anticipated movies of 2024. Number 10 is Kraven the Hunter. This is in theaters in end of August, but this is a continuation of the expansion of the Spider-Man universe that Sony is currently trying to is just shoving down the road just to keep on keeping on. And this is one of Peter Parker's most iconic adversaries, Kraven the Hunter. Aaron Taylor Johnson plays Kraven the Hunter. It's ultra-violent origin story. This is the first Sony/Marvel movie with an R rating, right? Because Deadpool was Marvel, but through Fox, I want to say. So this Sony-Marvel, first Sony-Marvel movie with an R rating. It looks like the film will feature Rhino. And so we're getting ever so closer to the Sinister Six, which I think a lot of people are gnawing at the bit for. That would be awesome if it ever happens. It just feels like it's taking its sweet-ass time. It's like the opposite of Justice League, where it's like, we're going to lead with the formation of Justice League, and then we'll get into all the backstories of the people in Justice League. It's like, isn't part of the cool moment when they all decide to band together? Like, isn't that it? And we're emotionally invested in the formation of the Justice League, and it's like that moment where it gives you chills, because it's like, oh, this is the dawn of the Justice League. Nope. Man, they really fumbled the bag on that one. God, they butchered that. So, yeah, I mean, not that any of these... I mean, I guess Venom was kind of cool. I mean, what else has been released in the Sony Marvel movie universe besides the two Venom movies? You know? Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Oh, Morbius. Oh, sweet baby Jane. Yeah, so there's only been 3 movies so far, and they've only introduced, really, 2 of the Sinister Six. So it's like, I don't know, Kraven's, it feels like there's a lot of, I don't know, I could be completely wrong about this, but it feels like there's a lot of a lot riding on Kraven the Hunter. I can't imagine having another dud like Morbius and being like, well, we don't give up now, quitters never win. 9 is Gladiator 2. I don't know, dude. What? I really liked Gladiator. Did we need another Gladiator? The sequel will focus on Lucius, a supporting character in the original movie. Lucius is the son of Lucia Connie Nielsen. How you doing? So that means he's also the nephew of Commodus, who was played by Joaquin Phoenix, but does it not look like he's... Oh, so I don't think Joaquin Phoenix is going to be in it. No plot details so far. Ooh, Denzel Washington's in it. Okay. So, Pedro Pascal. So, yeah, I mean, okay. Initially, I'm like, it's a joke, right? Wasn't Gladiator 2, like, one of the bigger jokes? I feel like that's been a running joke for a while, running gag. Like, Gladiator 2. And now it's actually happening. Wow. And it's releasing right around Thanksgiving. So, I mean, you know, it doesn't hurt that Pedro Pascal and Denzel Washington are in it. And Connie Nielsen. So, yeah. I'll give it a go. This next one, I don't understand at all. It came out January 12th. Mean Girls. Like, I don't understand it. It's from Tina Fey, who did the original. Tina Fey's in it, as is the ladies' man, Tim Meadows. It's not a straight remake of the original movie. It's an adaptation of the stage musical. I don't know, dude. I can't see me enjoying that. It's just like, that's another one where it's like, I think the original's fine. Wild that it's like, we're not even going to give it a different name. It's just the same name. And if you are a fan of the movie and never saw the musical, you're going to be like, what the fuck is this shit? So, yeah, okay. Madam Web comes out Valentine's Day. This is another one of the Sony Spider-Man universe. Well, looky here. They're really cranking it up. They're like, we got to get the Sinister Six thing out. We got to get it out and we got to rush through all the characters. Madam Web, I saw the trailer for this. I'm not crazy about it. Dakota Johnson plays a clairvoyant NYC paramedic with the support from all-stars Sydney Sweeney, Isabella Merced, Tahar Rahim, and Adam Scott. The fact that Adam Scott is in this gives me a little hope, because it's like, okay, you know, he's a how did this get made regular. Is he going to give this a certain level of, like, campy, nerdy credibility that he lended to, like, Piranha 3D? Possibly. So yeah, trailer got mixed reaction, but reports say the movie's test screenings have been smooth sailing so far. Yeah, right. Just like the test screenings for The Flash were, test screenings. You might as well say, hey, would you like to buy a bridge in Brooklyn? So, yeah. I mean, I don't see that being good. I don't see that save. I don't think it would. I would hope it doesn't completely destroy the momentum towards the Sinister Six, because we all need the Sinister Six movie, especially after what we saw in Spider-Man Far From Home. No Way Home. We got a little taste, right, of what the Sinister Six movie could be and how awesome it could be. And then Sony's kind of like, you know, limping towards that finish line. Next one, though. Certifiable banger comes out in July. Deadpool 3. There have been a lot of leaks apparently online about this. Luckily, I've severely dialed back my what I'm doing online, so I haven't seen much of it other than Hugh Jackman plays Wolverine, which we knew, but that he's wearing like the old school 90s yellow uni costume that a lot of diehards of the comics and of the animated series have been thirsting for. So, Marina Baccarin returns as Vanessa. Brianna Hildebrand returns as Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Shioli Kutsuna returns as Yukio. Leslie Uggams is Blind Al. Jennifer Garner will don her red suit again after 19 years to play Assassin Elektra. Wow, that's pretty sweet. That's pretty cool, dude. All right, hold up. Damn, I should have done this
years ago.
Let's see. Okay, written and directed by Sean Levy. Got it. Emma Corrin, Matthew McPhee. Oh, the guy, one of the dudes from Succession. who apparently is British. I don't know if you've been watching football recently, but anytime they go to commercial, they have him in a nice tux talking about, I don't know, cars, whatever. And he's got an English-British accent. I was like, what the hell? Which prompted me to say that I think English-British actors on a more frequent basis have, like, commit way better American accents than American actors doing British accents. English accents. Oh, Karen Sony. Oh, Dopinder. That's the guy. Got it. Rob Delaney comes back. Awesome. And then Stefan Kapicic voices Colossus. Voices Colossus. Can't stress that enough. Cool. All right. And I'm sure there'll be cameos galore. I mean, there were cameos. They're really awesome cameos in Deadpool 2. So there, I know there was talk about Taylor Swift possibly appearing in Deadpool 3. I think that, depending on how they use her and how it's done, it could be really good. Because she's a good friend of Blake Lively. He's married to Ryan Reynolds. So I think that could be cool. So yeah, that's going to be a banger. Next up is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. Oh, what a day. Fans were instantly drawn back into the manic mechanic, high contrast dystopia created by George Miller more than 30 years ago. Fifth installment follows renegade warrior Furiosa, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, from her kidnapping from the green place of many mothers to the wasteland and finally to the Citadel, home of the despotic Immortan Joe. We're excited to see Chris Hemsworth put down Mjolnir to step into the villainous role of Demetus. Cool. We can't wait until they reveal the actor behind Immortan Joe's mask. Also cool. Huh. But is this a prequel? I guess I should have read more about this. Because wouldn't you just bring back Charlize Theron? She's a fucking amazing Furiosa. So it must be... Because Anya Taylor-Joy is younger. So that's my guess is like, oh, okay. This is the story of a girl. So yeah, sign me up for that, Hoss. Beetlejuice 2. So, I don't know if this should get a sequel. I know people have been clamoring for it, but like, Michael Keaton returns, cool. Winona Ryder returns, cool. Catherine O'Hara returns, cool. Jenna Ortega will be playing Ryder's daughter, which makes, yeah, that makes, that's like perfect sense. No mention of Alec Baldwin, though. So that's interesting. But in theaters, Labor Day weekend. I want that to be good, but I feel like that's going to be... Yeah, okay. I don't know that I need much convincing, but I didn't know that I needed it or wanted it, but I was like, yeah, I'll take it. Argyle will be in theaters February 2nd, 2024. Dua Lipa's in it. Henry Cavill. Bryce Dallas Howard. Matthew Vaughn is helming. Sam Rockwell's in it. Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be along the lines of, like, what is that Sidney Poreau series that's currently happening, where it's like a bunch of A-list-ish stars in one ensemble cast. Kind of like, I guess I get a Knives Out vibe to this, but also, the last one was called A Haunting in Venice, but there was like Death on the Nile and then Murder on a Train was the other one, where it's like we got a lot of name actors, got them together and made a decent movie. Like, yeah, you know, no one's doing retrospectives on them, I don't think, but I wonder if this is along the lines of like Death on the Nile, Murder on a Train, on the Orient Express. Murder on a Train, I mean, why not call it that? Murder on the Orient Express, Death on the Nile, and then A Haunting in Venice, I think, are all in the same kind of franchise. I wonder if Argyle is going to be along those lines, or if it's going to be more along the lines of Knives Out 1. Knives Out 2 is good too, but I think a lot of people would say not as good as 1. But all I know is the last time I saw Sam Rockwell play an assassin, what was it called? Mr. Wrong? Mr. Right? That shit sucked! With Anna Kendrick, I think. Wasn't good. Despite, like, I kept seeing like all these crazy ratings on Amazon. I was like, all right. Maybe Amazon shouldn't... You shouldn't be allowed to review on Amazon. So, yeah. I'm not, like... I don't know if I'll see that in theaters. unless my girlfriend does. And then we got Joker 2, The Fappening. No, Joker Folie à Deux. This is coming out early October, which is perfect timing. I think that's when the first one came out. Expect the Unexpected with Todd Phillips in the Joker sequel. He was adamant that the 2019 release was a standalone, and then he announced the follow-up. A follow-up was in development the following June. Well, it's like, yeah, dude, when your shit's that good and you make tons of money, usually they want you to make more. So it takes a strong person to be like, no thank you to this mountain of cash. Comics fans took up considerable server space speculating online about whether the Clown Prince of Crime's girlfriend, Harley Quinn, would make an appearance. And lo and behold, pop icon Lady Gaga secured the role, which is pretty good damn casting. Brendan Gleeson and Catherine Keener also joining the cast in unannounced roles. So for sure, dude. I don't think I saw the first one in theaters, which is oversight on my part. I don't think I did. But that one will be one that I should probably head out to the cinema for. Even though it does make me a little anxious. The first one made me very... I mean, Joaquin Phoenix's performance in that was disturbing to the max. And, like, all the people that said, you know, it's kind of like... I mean, and I've never seen Taxi Driver, but, like, Robert De Niro Jr.'s performance in Taxi Driver, it's like, I can see that. Mm-hmm. I mean, just in the clips I've seen from Taxi Driver, it's like, okay. But, like, this, his body, the violence, it just feels, oof, not your typical supervillain origin story. Dune Part 2 in theaters March 1st. I remember when I streamed this on Max, HBO Max, in 2021, I was like, this is one of the better, if not one of the best, sci-fi films of the 21st century. I think it's the tweet that I put out there. I was had a lot of teats, or possibly tequils, Tequila Mockingbird, up in my system. So blame it on the alcohol, blame it on the vodka, blame it on the booze. But I think, and I mean, Austin Butler is a newcomer. Stellan Skarsgård is in the mix now. Florence Pugh, what? Princess Irulan. So I mean. And that first one was a lot of setting up everything. It was just 2 hours of setup, feels like. And it still just visually engrossed me, you know, because I had never seen the original. I was like 3 or 4 when it came out, and I don't know that it got a lot of rotation on TV either. So a lot of it was just fresh and new to me, and I was like, oh, wow, okay. But I remember, like, as a kid hearing, oh, Dune sucked. Dune was the worst. The movie, it sucked. So, yeah, I'm excited for this one. I might have been a little bit... Let's see what I actually wrote. Of course, it's not going to show. Whoa. Oh, damn. I guess someone else owns RealCinch.com. Well, isn't that an absolute pain in the peen? Okay. But, yeah, so I'm going to go out on a limb and say this one, I've only seen, like, a teaser trailer, I think. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say this one is going to be better than the first one, which I thought was one of the better, if not one of the best, sci-fi films, 21st century. So those are the most anticipated movies of 2024. Let's talk TV. Top TV series of 2023, from published, posted by IMDb. Number 10 was History of the World Part 2, which is very interesting, because I didn't think it... very interesting. All-star comedy cast. Really liked, most, if not all, the cast that they had on there. Nick Kroll, Ike Barinholtz, the dude from The Mick, who was also in... was it No Hard Feelings? The movie with Jennifer Lawrence. Ooh, baby. I tooted. Excuse. History of the World Part 2. Wild that it was like, this is a follow-up to History of the World Part 1, which came out so long ago. And they kind of stuck with it. And it was definitely funny, for sure. But for to say it was a top TV series of 2023 is interesting, dude. I would not have expected that. Surprising. I really liked it, mostly because of Nick Kroll and mostly because of Ike Barinholtz. But I did not think, oh, this is, yeah, this is one of the best. I mean, one of the funniest, which is, I don't know if that's saying much considering the state of comedy these days. Ah, am I right? So that's number 10. Number 9 is You, which I watched the first season, two seasons, with my now ex-wife. And it was one of those series where we were both looking at each other and we're like, this is ridiculous. This is awful. Is this good? And we could not stop watching. But it's like every person has their limits. The fact that it was like, oh, you're into murder too? I don't know. I'm probably spoiling something, but I did not watch season... I guess it's in season 4 now, which is outrageous. I think I stopped after season 2. I was like, this is preposterous. I cannot... And it was also, I think, my mindset at the time, because it's like I'm going through a separation, which was going through... Well, this might have been before the separation. But it was like, my marriage is falling apart. And this guy's just, like, banging all kinds of women, and, like, they love him despite the fact that he murders. Fuck you. Like, I was just, you know, so, I don't know. Jealous is not the word. It was just like, what am I doing with my life? I need to get more into murder. You at number 9, barf. 8 is Loki, season 2. Hell yeah. I feel like it's a little low on the list. Like, considering the next 3... to 4, like 8 is low. I would have put this at 3, possibly 4, and you'll see why in a sec. That's how good Loki season 2 was. Was it as good as season 1? I think a lot of people are saying no, but season 2 was entertaining and engrossing and amusing in a different way. I personally love the newcomers to the cast, you know, R.I.P. Jonathan Majors. Who is going to jail, found guilty of assault or abuse. But I love the newcomers. I love how the relationship between Owen Wilson and... oh my God. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Hutchinson. Nope. You idiot. Taylor Swift wrote a song about him. Oh boy, Tom Hiddleston. Yikes. Okay. That relationship blossomed. The relationship that male Loki had with female Loki developed even more. I just, you know, can't say enough good things about it. So, Loki season 2. Check it out. Way too low on this list. The next up at 7 is The Witcher. I gave The Witcher a shot. I gave it a try. I really did. And my brother-in-law is super into it. He makes my sister watch it. She's like, I don't mind it, which is like a glowing endorsement for her. And now I hear that like Henry Cavill is leaving, and so everyone's pissed, and I don't know. Maybe I need to get back into it, but it's like the Witcher and Wheel of Time on Amazon Prime Video are two shows that it's like more fantasy oriented, and for whatever reason, I'm not as, you know, even though they're so adjacent and so often intertwined, sci-fi and fantasy, superhero and fantasy, you know, adventure, action and fantasy, like they are so closely related. Fantasy has never, I mean, I remember Lord of the Rings, watching that trilogy in theaters. You know, and I enjoyed the Dungeons and Dragons movie, but yet Witcher and Wheel of Time, it's just I can't really stick with it. That's on me, I guess. Number 6 is American Horror Story, an anthology series that I've never watched. I know, shocking. My sister-in-law, or ex-sister-in-law, I should say. I guess that's how you should say it. I don't know. My daughter's aunt is like hardcore into that series, and just from looking at the, because FX always has done a incredible job with their promotional art and creative, not just their posters, but their ads, the promos, the interstitials that they run are just so awesome for everything. I mean, you look at like Dave on FX. That's just like a Curb Your Enthusiasm-esque comedy series, and they have developed for each season a new and unique like creative to it in terms of like when they're introing, when they, you know, they put the TV ratings up or they're introing, you know, and now Dave, or like this episode is sponsored by, or like, and now back to Dave, like those little vignettes, I guess you'd call it, I don't know, sequences. It's incredible what they do. And I think what has, I mean, I'm not a big horror person. Horror comedies, yes. Campy horror, yes. Gory horror, no. And like what FX has done with not just American Horror Story in terms of the creative and the advertising and promotions, but also what was that other one? Oh, so disgusting. Ugh. Now I gotta look it up. The Strain. Oh, The Strain, dude. Barf-a-rama. There was another one too, but The Strain was just like, that's allowed in public. So no thanks in American Horror Story. Only Murders in the Building at number 5. I did see season 1. I have not seen season 2. Again, I get into my own head about like the idea of people, I don't want to say profiting, but exploiting murder for entertainment. I know it sounds so stupid considering all the movies that I love and TV shows that I love. And I guess this kind of Only Murders in the Building kind of taps into that, because like they start a podcast that turns into a true crime murder podcast that gets big, but then it's like it can't feel that good. Like your livelihood is based on entertaining people that have this, I don't know, like what is the, there's a name for it too, like but tragedy porn kind of thing, I don't know. So, I should watch season 2. I really should. Because I did enjoy season 1, but there is that thing in the back of my mind, like, and it even happens at my work, where it's like, this is our most popular series, but it's about the murder of real people. So there's just like a disconnect there for me. I can't, for some reason, my brain won't allow me. Despite, like, it's like, I can watch Commando and Rambo and fucking all these other action movies where like hundreds of John Wick, where like hundreds of characters are getting murdered, mowed down, but like that's so removed from reality. I feel like, I don't know. Number 4 is Ahsoka, which I agree with, that needs to be up there. And I would even argue that Ahsoka should be over the next entry in this list, The Mandalorian. Mandalorian number 3. I think Ahsoka should be above The Mandalorian, and I think Loki season 2 is right there with Ahsoka. Mm. It's like I feel like they're tied, and if you're like, you can't do that, it's against the rules, the unwritten rules of ranking and rating. I would say Loki by a hair over Ahsoka. So Ahsoka, number 4, which I didn't have too high hopes for Ahsoka, and I don't think a lot of people did, because there had been a stretch of shows from Disney Plus about Star Wars where it's like, it just missed the mark, and it's just, you know, Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, you know, these are beloved characters that you would think would carry the series, and that they would put a greater amount of detail and thought into, like they had The Mandalorian, and they had with brain is just not working today, huh? You don't want to work today? Okay. Thing with the thing. Not Rogue One. Andor. Woo, baby. I want to get with you and take your picture. So, yeah. Ahsoka kind of, like, broke the slump. We got over the hump there. Because, like, for a while, I was like, man, they really only have The Mandalorian, and then Andor came along. That's wild how that has turned out. That Star Wars portion, the series, through Disney+. Like, Mandalorian, the three most critically acclaimed and most beloved amongst fans series are about, like, I would consider, I don't want to say ancillary characters, but like Mandalorian. When I first started, I was like, Mandalorian, get the fuck out of here. No one's going to watch that. And then Ahsoka, it's like, I wasn't, you know, I'm not that big into Star Wars, so I didn't watch the animated series, so I didn't know much about her or about, you know, what went down. And, like, I don't know that you... I'm sure if you have seen it, it completely enriches the experience, but, like, the fact that I didn't see it and was still not completely lost was really cool. But, like, Ahsoka, Andor, and The Mandalorian. Like, if you're an exec and you're looking up at your release schedule and you're like, I feel good about Boba Fett and Obi-Wan. A lot of cachet there. A lot of, like, IP significance. And then it's, like, Ahsoka, Mandalorian, and... Andor, oh, these are big risks, high risks. You better be right about this. And it's like those three did better than Boba Fett and Obi-Wan. Wow. And that, you know, Mandalorian, I think a lot of people would say was not the best season, the most recent season, but still better than most series, obviously, if it's on this list. But like in terms of like how you would rank it amongst the first three seasons, it's like it's, I don't think it's 3 out of 3. But not by much. Next up is The Last of Us, which is wild that it's at number 2. I would have thought for sure that Last of Us would be number 1. And that's only because the number 1 is like, huh? But Last of Us was like all anyone could ever talk about or post about. I think it was last January, right? Might have been. I think it released in January of last year, 2023. And... video game adaptation. One of the first video game adaptations that was successful and acclaimed and paved the way for Super Mario Brothers. No. But it's just gives you hope for video game adaptations in the future, and it made me want to play the game. So you got me. Congratulations. Mission accomplished. But season 2, from what I've heard so far, is just going to be just as good, if not better. So, pumped for season 2, whenever the hell that comes out. 2027. 4 years from now. 3 years from now. Number 1 is Black Mirror. That's wild, right? Like, I like Black Mirror. I mean, I loved Black Mirror. And then the more recent seasons were good. Not great, I don't think. People are like, ah, Black Mirror, we're over it. Like, and a lot of people, even with this season, were like, ah, we're over it. Technology's scary, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of run its course, you know. But I really liked this past season, especially the episode with Aaron Paul and the dude from 40 Days and 40 Nights, Josh Hartnett. Huh? All right. It's starting to work again, this old noodle. So, yeah, Black Mirror, number 1, kind of surprising and shocking to be H. But, like, Gen V, I thought, should be in the mix here. Monarch, for sure. Legacy of Monsters, I think, has to be on your list. Like, I would have put that a bunch of, like, half of the shows that are on this list, that's for sure. But Gen V, I think, is worthy of consideration. And I'm sure I'm missing a thousand more. Let's see what else. I mean, this is just for the United States. I wonder if I change it to... Canada. What are the Canadians watching, eh? Yeah, it's pretty much the same. Star Trek Picard. Okay. Random. Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Okay. Canadians love Star Trek. Good to know. Good to know. So, that's my reaction to the top 10 TV series of 2023.